Before we begin, I'd like to emphasize that this podcast is an extension of my surgical work and research at Visionary Eye Doctors, and thank you all for tuning in every week or multiple times to kind of hear about our research and how we help patients. And thank you to all of you who have flown in from all over the world to see us here, so I'm very humbled by that. So it is my hope and desire to keep this information free to all of you, especially to my dear patients. And in keeping with this mission, we are very thankful to our first sponsor for this podcast, Wizard Dry Eye Mask. Many of you have heard me talk about the Wizard before. I have loved this product for years. It looks like this. I have one right next to my bed. So does my husband. I used mine last night. And even, you know, if I can't sleep, I'll use it. It's a wonderful product that you just plug in next to your bed or even at your computer. I've been known, if I start to develop a sty, to do the Wizard as I type and then switch, you know, if I have warm, just like a warm compress. So it works wonderful for that. So thank you to the Wizard. If you mention our name, podcast, Visionary Eye Doctors, Dr. Kramer's, they'll give you a 1-year guarantee. If anything happens to the product, just call them up and they'll replace it for you for free. So thank you to the Wizard Research team for sponsoring this podcast. Enjoy. Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Sandy Laura Kramers, one of the board-certified eye surgeons at Visionary Eye Doctors. Thank you again for joining us for the Visionary Eye Doctors podcast, the EYE show. Today, we're going to talk about something that is not a fun thing to have at all. It's one of the most uncomfortable diseases you could have of your eye. And it's interesting because yesterday I was playing chess with a friend and we were waiting for our kids to finish track or soccer, actually. And the mosquitoes were biting. And I'm usually not a complainer. And I was just like, you know, I kept on hitting, scratching. I couldn't even concentrate on the chess game and I lost. And I was kind of complaining in a way, like, oh my gosh, those mosquitoes are terrible. That's why I'm doing so badly at chess. And as we were walking back to get the boys, he was telling me about friends of his that he knew that were POWs in Vietnam, and how one of the worst things they complained of is when they were in the stockade, meaning their hands and heads were, you know, completely immobile. And in Vietnam, there's a lot of mosquitoes, and the mosquitoes would bite them almost to death, in the sense that they would, that was one of the most painful things they remember, was being literally eaten alive by the mosquitoes. And one of the POWs told him of a mosquito that was so fat with his blood that the mosquito could barely fly in front of him. He was so engorged with blood. And I was thinking to myself, you know what, I shouldn't complain about these stupid mosquitoes, because there's always somebody, you know, worse out there in terms of difficulties or pain. And this is related to a book I'm actually going through called Dopamine Nation by Dr. Anne Lemke. It's an excellent book. As we talked about in a previous podcast, my concern has been that dopamine has been destroying people's eyes and brains, and there's a lot of data to show that now. And when you look at me on YouTube, you are hopefully blinking and not looking at me. You're hopefully listening to me with your eyes closed, because you've heard me say this hundreds of times on podcasts, YouTube videos, and for my patients in person. And the reason for this is that the dopamine hit you get from feel good, you know, videos, TikToks, you know, scrolling, of course, all the wonderful things we eat, like gluten, dairy, sugar, all the croissants and all these delicious foods we eat, spike our dopamine, as do addictions. And things, you know, whatever the daily addiction is, whether it's coffee or sugar or porn or YouTube videos or whatever it is, right? We all have our needs for a little bit of dopamine here and there, but it can get out of control. So in this book, she talks about the beauty and the real importance of embracing pain, you know, actually seeking painful experiences in a positive way, in the sense of saying no to yourself, not eating right when you wake up, or delaying your coffee, or delaying your treat, or delaying your lunch, or delaying your instant gratification, or saying no to your children, taking cold showers. Amazing research on this, and it's related to my topic today in a way, but I wanted to mention this because it's new and fresh in my brain, and I want you guys to, you know, learned from what I learned is that, you know, trying to find things that you don't like to do and doing them are actually good for your health and good for your mental health. And of course, you would know that on the spiritual side, I would say that's been going on, of course, for thousands of years. And that in God's wisdom has allowed many different faiths to embrace that type of suffering. And even in many faiths to even welcome suffering and even ask for suffering in a good way, not in a negative way, but in a positive way. So I wanted to mention that. So today we're going to talk about one of the most uncomfortable disease processes you can have in your eye. And I've seen thousands of patients with these types of keratitis or corneal inflammation. And as many of you know, I do a lot of cataract surgery and I see a lot of patients with dry eye disease. And some of those patients are the most unhappy patients, the ones that just don't see well because of their dry eye or have chronic pain because of their dry eye, and even to the point of suicide. And there have been patients that have committed suicide over the terrible pain that occurs from dry eye disease. And it can be devastating for the patient and their family. So sometimes these diseases occur because of a virus. And in a previous podcast, we talked about keratitis, inflammation of the cornea. And as you know, the cornea is the most sensitive part of the entire body. That's if you get like any, you know, eyebrow or eyelash, I should say, eyelash or hair in your cornea, it can be very, very, very painful. Even if you just don't blink for a few minutes, as you know, it can be excruciating and it can even cause you to have a headache. So when we talk about keratitis, like we did in a previous podcast, we talked about the infectious keratitis and the non-infectious keratitis. And the non-infectious keratitis is a dry eye, meibomian gland dysfunction, dry, the lack of oil, the lack of water, that's non-infectious, there's no infection. In terms of infectious keratitis, there's the bacterial and the viral and the fungal. And so we're going to talk about the key viral component today called herpes simplex and herpes zoster. And this can be very devastating because it can leave scar tissue in the most sensitive part of the body, the corneal nerves, and it can lead sometimes to pain that can sometimes recur. So we're going to talk about these two different types of viruses and why they're important to pick it up right away. So as always, if you ever have any pain in your eyes, you see your eye doctor right away. We're going to talk first about herpes simplex and then about herpes zoster. But let me mention one thing about herpes zoster. I've seen now multiple patients with the first symptom being pain in their ear. And it's very unusual, but it has to do with how herpes zoster actually stays dormant in your body. So if you ever have pain in your ear and you start to see a little bump developing anywhere along your eyelid or scalp or ear or anywhere on your face, a little bump like a rash, you see your doctor, medical doctor right away, or your eye doctor right away, so they can treat you for that right away. So talking about herpes simplex and herpes virus, they're both herpes type of viruses, but they're very different in how they look to the ophthalmologist and how they actually occur. So herpes simplex, there's type 1 and type 2. Type 1 is called oral herpes simplex, where is basically the kind of cold sore you get from either a kissing disease. You might get it from sharing somebody's chapstick or kissing somebody per se if they have a cold sore, touching a surface with herpes simplex onto your mouth. Type 2 is genital herpes, and that can also be very debilitating. And type 1 and type 2 can actually go to the eye in different ways. Type 1 is basically just kind of an actual acute infection that can occur where you actually get the herpes that starts to replicate in your corneal epithelium tissue. And we'll see it as a dendrite with these kind of branching patterns with these little terminal bulbs. It looks like a light bulb at the end of these long branches, like a tree, like a branch of a tree with a little light bulb at the end. They're called dendrites. And we'll see that under the microscope, the slit lamp microscope that we'll look for. The herpes zoster can look similar sometimes, but it's a different mechanism, and they have these kind of branching dendrites or pseudodendrites. They're not really, like, they're really thin and irregular, and they don't have these light bulbs or bulbs at the end, so they're called pseudodendrites. The simplex is something, as we talked about, can occur acutely, but also it can, like a cold sore, come and go. And sometimes it will affect the cornea because it stays dormant in your trigeminal ganglion. So your eye, if you look at my face or imagine my face, every part of my face is basically innervated by a different branch of the cranial nerve number 5, called the trigeminal nerve. And that trigeminal nerve is in charge of my sensory, of my upper eyelids, my cheeks, and my lower face. And so there's called divisions of the trigeminal nerve. There's the first and second and third division. And a lot of times it will affect the first division, which it can sometimes affect the eye and the cornea. So with herpes simplex, we try to treat the acute infection and then treat the inflammation that can occur from the infection. So the first thing we'll do when we see a herpes simplex dendrite on the either cornea, or we suspect that it's causing conjunctivitis, or we see it on the eyelid, is we'll start an antiviral topical drop or ointment. One's called trifluridine. There's vedarabine. We also sometimes use ganciclovir ointment. So depending on what your insurance covers, we'll try one of those to basically stop the viral replication. The virus literally takes over and starts to replicate in the epithelium. We will not use steroids initially until that epithelial disease of the simplex is taken care of. And then once it's taken care of and kind of healed, if there's some stromal inflammation, meaning it's going deeper into the cornea, then we'll use steroids, and we'll use steroids sometimes for months. We also will give a pill called acyclovir. We used to not do this, but now we do, because it's just to cover the potential risk of the virus getting a little bit out of control. And those oral antivirals are called acyclovir, famvir, or valacyclovir, or famcyclovir. So there's different types of antiviral medications we use now. So this is one of those things that patients will know when they're about to get this blow up. In other words, if they're going to the dentist, they'll restart their acyclovir. If they get sick, they might restart their acyclovir, because they know that the cold sores can start to come up and then they can hit the cornea again. And the problem is, it can leave scar tissue. Every time there's inflammation anywhere in the body, scar tissue can follow. And in the cornea, which is a clear window, it can be devastating. It really can be lead to vision loss. And one of the number one causes, or I should say causes, of the need for corneal transplants is corneal scar tissue from herpes. So we want to avoid it as much as possible. So I'm a big fan of not, you know, trying to do all the low inflammatory things to try to keep that virus from coming back. Stress, lack of sleep, lack of exercise, probably diet, of course, being immunocompromised for any reason, getting sick can make it reactivate. So that's herpes simplex. Let me just make sure I'm not forgetting anything. So if you get a little virus on the eyelid and you have history of cold sores, of course, go see your doctor right away. They'll have you use some warm compresses, a little bit of soaking, just to help the help keep it clean so you don't get a bacterial infection on top. We'll often give an antibiotic just to prevent a virus, a bacteria, from taking advantage. Sometimes we'll actually scrape the dendrite off if it's just epithelial. Just be aware of that. And then if there's any type of progression where it goes from the epithelium, stroma, and then into the eye, will also give sometimes a dilating drop called scopolamine if there's any signs of inflammation in the eye, and then pressure lowering medications if the pressure starts to become a problem, if it's very severe. Rarely do we need oral steroids for simplex, but if it's a necrotizing herpes simplex, which is rare, thank goodness, we will do that. So that's simplex. And the zoster is actually, in a way, kind of different. So zoster comes from a different type of virus, in the sense that it's varicella, basically like your chicken pox. So if you get chicken pox, that virus, the varicella virus, will actually stay in your dorsal root ganglia and also your trigeminal ganglia. That's the ganglion cells around the cranial nerves in your brain. And they'll stay there quietly until they're ready to come out and reattack, either because you become immunocompromised, you get older, you have chemotherapy, you develop diabetes, you're under a lot of stress, and it will come out like zoster, which looks very different. Often, patients will have a big rash. Sometimes it can become black along the whole face. If it touches the nose, it's called Hutchinson's sign. It's more likely to touch the cornea if it touches the nose. We'll always be looking for that. At the first sign of any rash, or even pain before a rash like this, couple of patients I've seen, more than a couple, with ear pain and then a little bump, we start first to stop the reactivation of the virus with an oral antiviral like acyclovir, famvir, valacyclovir, any of those pills, to prevent the virus from coming out of its ganglion, going back across the sensory nerve, and then attacking the eye or the face or the dermatome, as it's called, the actual pattern of the cranial nerve's root. This also happens with Simplex, of the virus coming down the sensory nerve and then attacking. So the oral medication, the pills, are trying to prevent that initial recurrence of the full virus into the skin, cornea, conjunctiva, inside the eye, the brain. So that's the most important thing. Once that's done, then we start steroids right away, because the rest of it's obvious, often the immune reaction that can lead to scar tissue and even blindness, because it can lead to uveitis, scleritis, meningitis. And so we really try to attack it very early. And then many patients might need IV, acyclovir or Famvir, one of the IVs if it's very severe, and even oral steroids. So zoster is more severe. A friend of mine years ago was admitted to the hospital, even though she was, I think, 45, with zoster, and because they were just concerned. It used to be we would actually do a whole immunocompromised workup when young people would have zoster, but now we've seen younger people with zoster. Okay, just to confirm, I've covered everything. We used to culture these. We don't really culture these anymore, but sometimes we'll want to see with Simplex if it's HSV-1 or HSV-2, especially if it's a child, but usually we just treat. Let me just confirm one other thing. Again, some warm compresses if it's involving your face. With zoster, the most important thing, I think, of course, is to save the vision, prevent death, save the vision, and prevent postherpetic neuralgia. So a friend of mine, wonderful guy, had postherpetic neuralgia after zoster, and he said that was the worst of the infection. That was worse than anything else, and he wasn't treated early on. He was in Boston in one of the best hospitals, but they didn't give him the pre-treatment to prevent postherpetic neuralgia. And the treatment you need to know and tell your friends about is that, and doctors for some reason constantly forget this, is amitriptyline, which is basically 25 milligrams three times a day. You start immediately to try to prevent the postherpetic neuralgia pain and even help with the depression, because this can be debilitating. We also use capsaicin Zostrix ointment three times a day after the rash heals to help with the pain. And then there's something called a Quetzal patch that you apply for 1 hour every 3 months to help with pain. And we get pain specialists involved if that's not enough, because it can be very, very painful initially when it happens. And then after the infection is healed, the postherpetic neuralgia means that the nerves have been affected by the virus and they just keep firing pain, and we just want to avoid that. So don't forget to get treated for the postherpetic neuralgia as soon as you start getting treated for the actual zoster virus. Okay. A couple other things that do help: autologous serum, platelet-rich plasma, albumin drops, amniotic membrane have helped with the initial keratitis. So sometimes we'll do that. Sometimes that works even in a way when patients can't afford certain types of, like ganciclovir ointment is not covered by insurance often. It can be very, very expensive. So sometimes we'll do that to help. Same thing with pressure rises. If you have uveitis, inflammation in the eye, with a zoster, we'll treat with anti-pressure medications, glaucoma medications to decrease that, and plan on being on the steroids and acyclovir probably for the rest of your life, off and on. And we'll teach patients to know when to come in at the first sign of any type of light sensitivity, pain, any type of rash. They come in right away and we start the medication. And I have my patients have years of refills on their acyclovir if they're traveling abroad, so they never have to worry about that. Okay, one thing about vaccines: there's no vaccines for herpes simplex. There are vaccines for herpes zoster. It is controversial. It's recommended after the age of 50. It's two doses intramuscularly given, and it does have an adjuvant, which means that there is a concern that it might lead to other side effects, so it's still controversial. So in general, for most patients, your doctors will recommend the vaccine if you have a history of chickenpox even, or if you've never had chickenpox, but we do have good treatments for both of these. So it's nothing to fear, but any type of issues with your face, rashes that are unusual, pain in your ears, pain in your eye, see your doctor right away. And don't forget to always have hope, no matter what happens. Try to remember that you have amazing, people around you that can help, and we are always here to help you. So thank you again for tuning in. Please pass this on to friends and family. Please subscribe, because that's the best thing you can do to help us help patients. Have a good day.